Hey there, it's Jim Stengel, host of the CMO Podcast. We're all marketers here, so let's be real for a sec. We all know that your website shouldn't be a static asset. It should be a dynamic part of your strategy to build your brand and drive conversions. That's marketing 101. But 54% of marketing leaders say web updates take too long. That's over half of you listening right now. And that's where Webflow comes in. Their visual-first platform allows you to build, launch, and optimize web pages fast. That means you can set ambitious marketing goals and your site can rise to that challenge. Learn why teams like Dropbox, IDEO, and Orange Theory all trust Webflow to achieve their most ambitious goals today at webflow.com. What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you way back growing up as a little girl in Muncie, Indiana?
Probably this dance brand, Capizio, which is going to sound maybe a little bit unexpected, but my mom was a modern dancer. And so dance and artists were just a part of my life. And I remember the feel of that brand and how it felt so special to get, you know, ballet shoes or a leotard. And it was that creative outlet as a kid in a not diverse, conservative state, and what that signified, what dance and art signified in a place like Muncie, Indiana, was really powerful. And that brand will always have like a special place in my heart.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. My guest today on the CMO Podcast is Melissa Hobley, the global chief marketing officer of Tinder. You know, swipe right, swipe left. Seriously, Tinder is a behemoth. The number one dating app in the world, 2 billion swipes a day, 20 million matches a day, a presence in 190 countries. Revenue is in the $2 billion range. It is the largest brand in the Match Group's portfolio of 40 brands. Melissa has been the global marketing officer for Tinder since August 2022. Before that, she was the top marketer at OkCupid for 5 years. OkCupid is also a Match Group brand. Melissa has had a wide-ranging career journey. After graduating from Fordham University, she began her career as a publicist in media and entertainment, and then into consulting with biology. The giant retailer Walgreens came calling, and Melissa spent 4 years there as VP of marketing. After a brief stint at a startup, Melissa joined the Match Group as CMO at OkCupid in 2017. This is my conversation with the colorful, radiant, and ebullient Melissa Hobley. Welcome to the CMO Podcast, Melissa. We just worked out, both of us. I'm like 10 minutes out of a workout. You're 20 minutes out of a workout. Is this a daily ritual or just something special before the weekend?
First of all, we're like coming in hot to the conversation because we both like worked out this morning. We're ready to go. Don't you feel like this, Jim? Working out is, yes, you do it for the health benefits, but it's very mental. It's very mental for me. And
I agree.
It's a daily thing. And even if it in between calls and time zones. And this morning I started my day with a call with my team in Tokyo and then ran the kids to school. And then you get the workout in before you jump into meetings. Even if I can't do a long session, like getting it in makes me feel better. Is it daily? I bet it's daily for you.
I do it every day. Yeah. I mean, there's exceptions here and there, but I had a late dinner last night for my daughter's birthday with a bunch of her friends. I mean, we were out till, I don't know, almost midnight, and I still got up at 5 a.m. and went to the workout. You got to do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
That's, by the way, that's so lovely. I bet you're like the cool dad. How old is your daughter? Did your daughter turn?
She just married last fall. She had her, what is it, 36th birthday?
Yeah. That's so wonderful.
Yeah. So we had a great time.
That's awesome.
What's your favorite exercise routine?
You know, I love HIIT workouts because I think my brain gets bored. And so I love Barry's Orange Theory. I live out on Long Island and there's an awesome gym called Underground, and every day you go and you get killed and it's different. And so that's my jam. What's yours?
I love cardio tennis, where you play tennis across multiple tennis courts. You play points and move to the next court and you run a lot and you do drills and it's competitive and it's fun and it moves fast. So I love that. It's just the best work. But I love cardio HIIT too.
Wait, that sounds amazing. I don't even play tennis. And that makes me want to learn how to play just to do that workout. That sounds fun.
It's super fun. It's a great community. And actually, it doesn't matter how good or bad you are because you hit a ball and you move to the next thing. So it's a blast.
That's so fun.
All right. Listen, spring is in the air and we're both feeling energetic this morning. Is this a great season for Tinder? Is there any seasonality to it?
There's totally, you know, it's so interesting. There's totally seasonality for dating apps and for Tinder. Tinder's the biggest dating app in the world. We have 3 billion swipes a day, 1.5 million dates a week, tens of millions of relationships all over the world. And there's two mostly critical times of the year for us. People are looking for a connection 12 months a year, but the biggest time for us is January and February, and which is so interesting. December gets a little quiet.
Yeah.
And for anybody single that's listening, this will resonate with them, or you have like friends or older kids. You know, what happens is Thanksgiving hits if you're in the US, or like the holiday season in other parts of the world. And people are like, there's too much going on. I don't want to seem desperate. I don't want to worry about the work holiday party or the family dinner or whatever. And so people get a little quiet in December. And then December 26th at 12:01, I'm not kidding, it is game on. And we see new people, we see old people, but the downloads jump and wow. It stays like that. The frenzy it really lasts almost until March. And it's not necessarily, it's a little bit New Year's resolutions, but the way that Gen Z talks about that more is like, no, it's like New Year, it's me time, self-care, I'm going to look for my person, I want connection. So we're just coming out of a really exciting and fun time. And then summer is big for us too. Summer love, the travel,
sure.
The summer flings that turn into longer flings, all that.
So good. Well, you have the best job title, right? Global Marketing Officer of Tinder. And I just want to know, when you walk into a room and you meet someone and you lay out what you do and you start chatting, what's the reaction you normally get?
Oh, you know, people love to talk to me.
Yeah, I bet.
And not because of me, but because of the job.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in the world of love and relationships and marriage and short-term, long-term, although 40% of people on Tinder are looking for something serious. So it was almost controversial when we started talking about love and marriage and long-term commitment. And the reaction I get is really funny. One of the most common ones is, oh my gosh, give me all the secrets to finding someone amazing.
Uh-huh.
And I, by the way, Jim, I love talking about that. I love it.
So how do you answer that, Melissa? What's your headline for that?
Oh, my headline is put in the effort. Because here's like a really interesting thing. And one of the best parts of my job, Jim, is like I get to work with anthropologists and sociologists and psychologists and marriage experts and matchmakers. A really good friend of mine is a very famous matchmaker who is matchmaking for someone wildly famous right now. And she's like a fourth generation matchmaker and she's Greek. And I'm obsessed with her.
Wow.
One of the things that she and I talk about a lot, and you see this in particular with women, they invest so much in their career. They may have an MBA from Wharton. They learned German this year. They're volunteering. They're the best auntie you could imagine, like award winning. They're volunteering at the homeless shelter. And they say, I really want to find my person. Okay. So what are we doing about that? Crickets. Well, I set up my profile. Okay. So what are you? Okay. So you set up a profile on Tinder. How are we doing? Well, I don't really go into it. Okay. So do you expect them to break into your house? Like how are we expecting?
Yeah.
You know, because by the way, I love love. I love connection. So it doesn't have to be on Tinder, but we're warped from a number of things. And that's probably a whole other podcast episode, but it's not the movies. You aren't rescued from a speeding cab and that's how it happens. That's not how, if you talk to someone that's in a happy, healthy relationship, it's probably not how it happened, right? Like it's not the movies. And we do ourselves a disservice when you put so much time and energy into all of these things and you don't put that time and energy into yourself. So the first thing I say is, hey, set up your profile and then like give, there's awesome people on Tinder. There's awesome people out there. Give them a chance to find you. And also like send a message, shoot your shot.
Yeah. We had Brad Hiranaga on the show last week, the CMO of Cotopaxi, used to be at General Mills. I told him we were hosting you and I said, what question would you like to ask Melissa? And actually what he said was, what's the biggest misconception about Tinder and dating apps? And we're sort of in that space now, but how would you answer that to Brad?
I love that question. The first I would say is that Tinder is just for hookups. You know, we have that perception. And first of all, that's not how 20-somethings think. They want connection with no judgment. And they don't, it's not even the language or the vernacular they use. Really hear that from, you know, millennials and Gen X and boomers. Again, like now if I speak at something, Jim, I'll say, who here knows somebody in a serious relationship from Tinder? And 98% of the room raises their hand. Mm-hmm. We all know someone that's in an awesome relationship from Tinder. And that happens every day. The second thing I probably say about like a misperception about Tinder or dating apps is that we want to get you on the date. We want to get you off. And there's like a funny pun there for my adult listeners.
I get it. Yeah, we get it.
You get it. Like we really do. And so all day, Tinder's an incredible team of engineers and product designers and marketers and experts on innovation and connection. And we work with the Kinsey Institute at IU. And we obsess with how do I get these two people who think it's kind of the equivalent of like you made eyes across the room. Mm-hmm. How do I get them to start talking and then get them on the date? They're both so into this obscure, cool band. We just surfaced that for both of you. Now go talk about that. That's a cool thing to connect on. So we want to get you on the date.
Love it. Your category is about 30 years old, and you spent a good bit of your career in it. Has it been a story over that 30 years of just constant rapid growth, or have there been bumps in the category or dips? And how healthy is the category right now?
It's a great question. And I had the benefit of, before I came to Tinder, working at like one of the OG brands, OkCupid. OkCupid was started by two Harvard math grads who self-described themselves as really nice nerds who couldn't meet girls and said, technology's helping me in every area of my life. Why isn't it helping me make connections and find my person? I was there for almost 6 years, and it's part of the Match Group brand. So it was in the same family, a sister brand to Tinder. And I learned so much there. The category has not had a straight linear path. Like most industries, it's not a straight linear path of growth. But when Tinder came around a little over 10 years ago now, it changed everything. And it changed everything because we have these phones and we had apps. And that was what was driving our life. And that's how we were getting cars, getting our tickets, finding a mortgage, connecting with friends. And Tinder made it really easy and really fun. And so the biggest innovation in this space after the original dating sites was Tinder and the invention of swiping. You know, and I'll say this, Jim, it's a great time to be in this space. It's a great time. There are clickbaity headlines out there, but the most fundamental human need after food, water, and shelter is connection. Mm-hmm. And we are so tethered to our phones, yet we are losing the ability to make real human connections. And there's a fascinating piece in The Atlantic just 2 or 3 weeks ago about, hey, the problem is actually that kids are getting phones at age 9. They don't know how to do those things. I spent a lot of time with a social worker who spends a lot of time with teenagers who said, I don't even know how anyone would be successful in a job or relationship because I see them just heads down on these devices. And so it is not an easy time to be at a dating app, but it is also such an exciting time. And, you know, we grew revenue in 2023. I'm so lucky because I am at the biggest player in the world. And so there are countries where, I was just in Thailand 2 weeks ago, they'll be the first country in Southeast Asia to legalize gay marriage. And the way that queer love is elevated and that connection, that's a very important area for Tinder. If you are LGBTQ, you probably come out on Tinder before you come out to your wider group of family and friends, or even your closest family and friends. So the importance of having an outlet and a place to find community for LGBTQ daters is paramount. The ability for a single mom who's a nurse to make connection. I mean, tell me how that person is dating, right? Well, she could go to happy hours. Well, she's a single nurse, a single mom and a nurse. Yeah. So her work schedule, affording a babysitter, getting that time off, maybe she gets only like 2 nights a week with her kid.
Right.
You know, the ability to make IRL connections is harder today. Again, I could go down a rabbit hole this, but when you talk to anthropologists and sociologists, we don't get together in the way that we did. And a lot of that, by the way, is so positive. It's because women have agency and autonomy. We don't have to be married at 18. We don't have to have babies at 20. You can go to university. You have IVF. You have abilities to plan how you want to do all of that. You want to focus on your career for a while. We are not defined by marriage status. That's something that's really not talked about with dating apps. We wouldn't exist if that wasn't true. If women didn't have agency and autonomy, Tinder wouldn't exist today, and neither would these other apps and sites. And so the power of making it easier and democratizing that experience is so incredible. And it's a real humbling opportunity when you say, I have an opportunity and responsibility to help this 20-year-old who feels very shy and introverted and lonely, to make them feel at first amazing about who they are. Straight, queer, trans, non-binary, pansexual, wants tonight, wants forever. No judgment. I have the power first to affirm who they are and what they want. And then second, I have the technology. And frankly, I got the biggest bar in the world to help them find someone. You know, dating apps are not the majority of people on Tinder. And I've set up thousands of profiles. I can't get into an Uber without talking about this. The majority of people on a dating app are not the person that walks into the bar and can talk to anybody. You know, people think, oh, I'm not going to be so successful because I'm not like the supermodel walking in. That's not the majority of people on apps. They're kind, wonderful people who want to find their person. And we get to help people do that every day. So it gets me going, as you can tell.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So, what do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com. You just said that you have to put in the effort, right, a few minutes ago. Is there anything else getting in the way? Because you do make it easy, right? And you have a fabulous app. And even I am, you know, I met my wife before there were apps like this, but I know people who met on Tinder, and I know people who have married because of that. What else gets in the way, Melissa?
Oh, a lot. A lot gets in the way. One is, I love to play this exercise. For people that are single, I'll say, describe to me who your perfect person is. And they'll go, right? Like 20 things. And then I'll say to someone who's happily married, maybe I'd ask you this, but right, did you ever think you would be with the person that you're with? And folks in happy, committed relationships, 9 times out of 10 will say, oh, never in a million years.
Right, right.
I'm happily married. My husband is Australian. He's Chinese. We met in New York City. If you ask me to describe him on paper, I've never, ever done
that. Right,
right. And so one thing that gets in the way is we have these warped ideas of what we should be with, what is attractive, what we need. And you actually have to throw all that out. You have to throw that out. And that's also, again, the power. One of the most beautiful insights about Tinder is there was some research done by academics in Europe. We had nothing to do with it. We didn't know about it till it came out. And they were fascinated by an explosion in interracial marriages. Explosion. And interracial marriages are still very unusual because many, including America, we still live in very segregated communities. Mm-hmm. And the cause was Tinder. An MIT review covered this, and then other researchers look to do this again and say, what's happening there? And it's because we don't let you say, give me a, I want this height. I want them to have a PhD. I want them to live in this neighborhood. I want them to have one cat. I want them to be in Aries. I want them, and you just eliminated 99% of the population. So we're not great at knowing what is a good fit for us or even what we should be open to. That gets in the way. We also are seeing with Gen Z, what gets in the way are these, the communication skills and the relationship building skills that, you know, you and I grew up in an era where you had to call people. Mm-hmm. When I started working, there was an email. And the muscle that built for me, that became my superpower, right? And so that's another challenge that we see of getting in the way is we are so digital that we're losing a little bit of that ability to know what to say to somebody and what to ask them and how to build that connection and that bond. And so, you know, those are some things we're thinking about a lot over at Tinder.
You love your job, I can tell.
Love it.
And I knew that before this call. You've been in this category since 2017. Take us back then. What attracted you to the category? Was it something you sought out? Was it intentional or is it more serendipity? How did you get into this business?
That's a great question. Totally accidental. I'm from Muncie, Indiana, and one of my closest friends, we've known since we were three, also works in marketing. And I'm so proud of her. And she's just crushing it. And she had a huge job. And she got a call about OkCupid in a CMO role. And she's like, I don't think this is a fit for me. But I met the CEO and I think you all are a fit.
What a great friend, by the way.
I mean, what a great friend, right? And I thought, oh gosh, that space, interesting. Hadn't really thought about it. Had done it. Had tried OkCupid and other apps. And Jim, what attracted me, and I didn't appreciate this going in, I was just like, you know what? I'll have the conversation. You always have the conversation, mm-hmm. right? I tell this to people that work for me. You always have, you have the conversation. It is the most rewarding experience I will probably have in my professional life. To get an email that says, I had lost my mother. This is a real story. I had lost my mother. I was in a very tough place. We were incredibly close. I did not think that it was in the cards for me to find my person. And a friend made me get on OkCupid and helped me like write some messages and some notes to people that I thought might be interesting. He just proposed and we're getting married next year. And I just can't thank you enough.
Wow.
You know, I had another circumstance where I had these two women were a couple. They pulled up next to a billboard. The billboard was inspired by a romance novel from the 80s. And so, but like flip it. So a woman holding another woman and they're gazing into their eyes longingly. And this couple wrote a note to me and said, I didn't know them. We pulled up, we're in San Francisco. We look up and there's an enormous billboard. It's like 100 feet by 100 feet. It's huge on the side of a billboard. And I actually get emotional telling the story. We started crying because we had never seen female queer representation look so beautiful and so dreamy and so unapologetically awesome. And we just wanted to thank you for that.
I've seen that billboard. It is beautiful.
Have you seen that billboard? Yeah. I'm so proud of that work. And I love this industry because of the ability to do those two things. One is facilitate the most important connection you'll have in your life. And second, to chip away at the homophobia that is out there, to elevate queer love, to elevate the communities and the identities that are out there, and what a time we need to do that, especially here in the US. So I love the space.
It's quite a brand purpose.
It's the most, listen, I've sold lipsticks. That was really fun and great. Yeah. This is so rewarding and so deep. And you know, I feel very, very deep responsibility and opportunity to continue to do both of those things. And as long as we keep doing that, Tinder as a brand is going to do great. And the category is going to continue to be important and interesting. And those things keep me going.
Now, you've been in this category 7 years. You love it. How are you different today than you were back in 2017 as a leader, as a person, as a CMO, as a leader? How has this changed you?
Oh, gosh, that's such a great question. I think I'm really, hopefully humility has been a little bit part of my ethos. I'm from Indiana. As I mentioned, I didn't have connections, money. I had nothing, you know, and I just felt like I had to out hustle. And I wasn't the smartest girl in the room either. And I really felt like an outsider when I started my career in PR, and I'm with a lot of that and you know, connections and money and mm-hmm. the Jimmy Choo's. And I'm like, you know, saving to get something at TJ Maxx, right? Like that's kind of how I felt. And I think being in this space, it's very humbling. It's very humbling because when people are pouring their heart out to you to say, no one will love me, I can't find someone. My family disowned me when I came out. Those things keep you very anchored and very tied to that mission. And that's one of the ways that it's changed me. You know, it's also, I love the global aspect of this work too. Mm-hmm. Korea has the lowest birth rate they've had basically since they started measuring. It's actually lower than Ukraine. And so also what's changed me is when studying the cultural implications of the feminist movement or lack thereof in parts of Asia, as another example, is really interesting. And so I love the global perspective that these roles have given me, and how that translates to connection is pretty interesting. I also think, you know, it's going to sound funny to hear this, Jim. I wonder if anybody else has shared this with you, but in some ways, I just take things less seriously. As you work and you find a career and a culture that you love and that you're proud to be in, mm-hmm. you kind of say, hey, let's enjoy what we do. Let's be competitive. Let's like, you know, let's do meaningful work. Yeah. We got to drive the business forward. But also, can we enjoy this while we're...
For sure. For sure. Fun is underrated. You know, if you're having fun in your work, you're doing work that consumers are going to enjoy because they want to have fun. I don't care what the category is. Bring a sense of humor. Bring some uplifting thinking.
Right.
Make sure your employees are enjoying what they're doing. I used to say that back at P&G. If you're not having fun working on a marketing idea, how do you think your consumers are going to see it? So, you know, it's just, it's fun is underrated. I love that. I love that space.
I couldn't agree more. Now, wait, let me ask you this. Do you feel like because you interviewed and you know so many leaders in many industries, do they tend to get more serious or less serious as their careers progress? What's the median?
No, I think what happens is, and I think you're seeing this in your life, I've seen it in my life, you get more confident and you get more self-aware, I think. And I try to work with younger people to sort of accelerate that curve, you know, build your confidence, build your self-awareness. I think when you have that, then I think you're opened to the joy in what we do and the privilege we have to do the kinds of things we do every day. And then I think creativity follows that and job satisfaction follows that. But I think it's, you sort of have to have the confidence and a bit of knowing who you are and when you're in the space where you're thriving and when you're not and how to adjust, you know, to get in that space. So that's kind of my two cents on it.
I think that's really interesting. And it's an under-discussed thing too, isn't it? Because we expect these teams to be so creative and come up with a viral moment. And how do you do that if you're exhausted and stressed and
yeah.
you don't have that safe space and you're not having fun?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right?
Listen, you've been in the role at Tinder about 20 months. You've been busy. I've watched all the things you're doing. You've launched the first ever global campaign for Tinder about a year ago. And from everything I've seen and heard and read, it had a quick and direct impact on people and on the business. So it's not easy to create a global campaign, not at all.
No.
So could you tell us a bit about that story? What was the impetus to do it? It's beautiful. It's having an impact. Everyone wants a beautiful campaign that drives the business. You seem to be doing that.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that story, what you've learned, what the experience has been for you in doing something that is attracting people and growing your brand?
Yeah. First, thank you so much for that compliment. I have an incredible team at Tinder that makes me look good every single day. So when I came in, you know, I had the benefit of being in the family and seeing kind of the arc of Tinder and where it had gone. I was aware of that perception. And you kind of just have to, isn't it annoying when people are just like, everything's great? Like, we had to be real clear. We're seen as the hookup app. And who's saying that? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. And does a 20-year-old think that or only a 70-year-old? Because I don't really care about a boomer's opinion, but I cared very deeply about, you know, the majority where the single market is, right? Which is always under 30. You always have way more single people under 30. And we started to really dig in. And one of the things we kept coming back to is one swipe can change your whole life. Can change your whole life. Mm-hmm. One swipe. Also, the change can be that you want to explore Berlin from Tinder, which, by the way, is a very popular use case. As you know, I've heard other people talk about this on your show. Gen Z values experiences. Mm-hmm. They want to travel over owning the thing. And they have such a cool mentality. I'll go to Paris. I'm going to use Tinder to set up some ways like, hey, want to go to the Louvre with me? Want to do this together? Want to go to the Eiffel Tower and get a cocktail? So also that possibility. Oh, we power possibilities. So that's where the genesis of, well, it starts with a swipe. And the it is whatever you want it to be. If Snickers is satisfaction and Disney is magic and Red Bull is adrenaline, we're possibilities. We're possibilities. No judgment. And the possibility, again, could be exploring your queerness. It could be finding your forever person, finding love, whatever that is. And then we wanted to have some fun, though, by acknowledging the hookup perception. And it was just really fun. You know, one of the spots that got the most attention was when you got on Tinder, you didn't know that a one-night stand would turn into two nightstands.
Yeah, cute.
Right? And the couple is obviously like moving in together. And that's a real story that I hear every single day. You know, I wasn't sure what I wanted, and now we're moving in together. And so it was so fun. Mischief was our creative partner on that. They were phenomenal. Stephanie Danzi comes from Pepsi, and she's the SVP at Tinder and my right hand. And we passionately worked with our teams in Germany and France and Australia and Japan and all over the world to get at where is Tinder viewed and what's the magic there. The campaign worked really well. We saw an immediate impact to business. shared in earnings, and it's given us some phenomenal momentum in 2023, and that carried on to 2024. And so we did it again, and we did it again, and we did it again, and you know, and we just have so much fun. One of my other favorite spots was when you got on Tinder, you had a fantastic summer fling, which turned into a fall fling, which turned into a winter fling, which turned into, you know, and the couple, like the seasons are changing around this beautiful couple, like as they're making out, and she's trans. And I just, it's really fun to be like, we get it. We're in on it. We get it. But actually there's a lot of love here. And let's talk about that a little bit more.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. So for those listening who are stuck doing a campaign or trying to find an idea or trying to pull their team together, what's your counsel as a leader having gone through this, which obviously you've had a great time, the team gelled, you found a fabulous idea, and you're having fun bringing it to life. And by the way, it's an idea that will never get old.
I think so.
You'll bring it to life in different ways, but it will never get old.
Thank you. I think so. I would say you can't overthink this stuff. You know, I've seen CMO friends who spend so much time on the strategy and the segmentation and da-da-da, and you're like, you're going to lose your window. One thing I knew, Jim, for sure, I had to move fast. I needed to move fast. It was a little easier for me. It was, you know, it was one of the probably easiest, best transitions I've had because I knew the category, I knew the space, I knew the business economics, I know subscription business, I know tech, I know the power of product, I know the importance of product and marketing being in link step. I know the speed at which technology moves. So I knew a lot of the pieces. But you know, one piece of advice would just be, you cannot do this stuff by committee. You have to move fast. You've got to have the right creative partner and the right internal team and share everything, because it's those specific insights that unlock really powerful creative platforms and like specific creative concepts. So that's, you know, that's one thing I would do. And then don't overtest it. We spend time with Gen Z a lot, and we wanted to get, is this a vibe? Is this hitting a note? Mm-hmm. And that reaction was incredibly positive. And they'll tell you now on TikTok immediately how they're, I had to translate for an executive at my company, this Tinder ad 8. And they were like, I don't know what this means. Is it bad? I go, no, let me translate. It means we crushed it.
Yeah. What's your advice to other people listening who would love to have the kind of business you have with Gen Z and their kind of relationship you have with Gen Z?
You know, you have to, it's kind of obvious, but I don't think a lot of people do a good job of get in there. We have a rule. I have a rule that whenever we travel to a market, you are spending time in a coffee shop or a bar. You're spending time there. You have to get under the skin of what's motivating them? What's hard? What's great? How are they spending their time? What does self-care mean to them? Why are they obsessed with astrology? By the way, that's a really fun job at Tinder. You know, I love being in a Cobbs in Brooklyn, deep in Bushwick the other day, and this cool table of 20-somethings. And I said, can I pick up your tab and just ask you a couple questions about dating? And I don't say where I'm from. And just what they had to say. And I didn't need to buy their coffees. People love telling you how dating's going, what they hate, what they love. And one of the things that they shared was, well, you know, they were all but one were straight. And they said, I will not go to an app that is not a great experience for my LGBTQ friends. I won't do it. Allyship is really important. And I just thought, that is so beautiful. Yeah, that is so awesome. And immediately like sharing that back with the team. And you know, I guess, Jim, like here's one of the tough things about this category. You know what's tough? Most people hate dating. Most people hate it.
That's a big and obvious insight, right?
It's an obvious insight, but that's where also, you know, it's what's challenging is a little bit like taxes. I got to do it, but I don't like doing it, you know? And so how do you, people say, oh, I don't like the apps. Oh, I'm over the apps. Well, really what they're meaning a lot of the time is like dating is hard, and it is hard. And so, you know, kind of putting yourself back in that mindset. And so back to your original question of like, how do you get close to Gen Z? How do you build a really good relationship with them? Is you got to really understand why it's hard, what's hard about it, and then get in there, swim around in it, get really comfortable. And that's, again, where like the creative unlocks come.
How do you spend your time? If I looked at your calendar for a month or two, what would I see in terms of the big buckets of time?
I'm very deliberate about carving out time for strategy and deep thinking and just creative thinking. I do not believe you should be in meetings all day. I mean, you can, and I could do that really easily. Everybody you probably have on your show could do that, but that's not where the ideas come from. So you would see pockets of like, okay, focus, time, creative thinking. You would, related to that, you would see me and the team out there, you know, out there doing things like piercings are really hot. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's that about? What's driving that? Related to that, you would see, we work with a phenomenal social psychologist, Dr. Sarah Conroth. She's with the Kinsey Institute. She's also a single mom. She lives in the Midwest. She's so interesting. So I spent a lot of time with her on every study that comes out on connection, relationship, identity, sex. You'll see me do that. You'll see me spend time with my teams around the world to understand what's going on. Spending time with my creative partner, Mischief, and other partners. You know, I'm spending time on, okay, what's the next thing that's going to happen on TikTok? What is that about? Spending time on media, like what are the right media channels? How are we getting the message out? What's working for us? What isn't?
When you say you carve out time for creative thinking, what do you do when you're carving out that time for creative thinking? What sorts of things are you thinking about? You know, how do you spend that time?
Yeah, you know, and I wish I could say it's like super structured and I have like a whole formula. I don't. It's okay, the strategy's working, but what if? Like, what's the push? What's the push? What's the collab? What's the, you know, sometimes it might be looking at other brands that have just done really cool stuff. First of all, what was that impact? How did that come to be? I love getting inspiration from what other folks and other players are doing. Wait, let me ask you, what are you seeing? What practices are you seeing lead to this crazy cool creativity?
You know, I think, I think your insight to create some time for reflection, thinking, pondering, it's so important. It's so important. I hear that. That's a theme I hear on the show. I think the most successful CMOs are very intentional with how they focus, how they spend their time. They do carve out time for thought. You know, we're so activity-based.
Yes.
And so many work and development plans are activity-based. You got to think, because the breakthrough happens when you connect things that are seemingly unrelated, or you expose yourself to something that you wouldn't be exposed to, but because you're reading something or watching something. So it's so, so important. So I love you. I love that you went there. And I think it's one reason you're so successful. What am I seeing in terms of marketing, CMOs, brands? You know, I think this area of, I don't know, you need to make life brighter, simpler, easier, more enjoyable in how you go to market. Because when you look at how the world is, you look at how people's lives are, and this is everything you're talking about, you got to figure out where you enter to do something helpful and meaningful and interesting for people. I don't care what category you're in, laundry detergent, dating, cars, any category, you have to find your place. Mm. And when you do that, people get it, they appreciate it, and they reward it. Hmm. And I just don't think we organize our work as much that way. I mean, you can call it, we're going to be a consumer-led company or a customer-driven company. Or, I mean, those are fine. Those are great words, but you got to pull that into action and follow through on it.
You're so right. And I just think so few people are talking about that. So when you go into companies and you say, hey, you're overscheduled.
Yeah.
There's no creative thought, because I'm looking at everybody's calendars and I don't see anything that actually allows for that. And you're so exhausted. It's not happening on your commute home.
No, you got to break that cycle.
Are they surprised when you push that? Are they like...
I mean, without an exception, when people have that realization, they act urgently. They realize they're tired. They realize they're not creative. They realize they're not bringing their best. So you have to... And, you know, a simple thing is... I mean, we were just talking about this now. Take apart your calendar. Look backwards 6 or 12 months and figure out what is pulling you into spaces you shouldn't be in, what's pulling you down, what's work you should find another way to do, delegate it, move it to another place. I mean, not get involved in as many things. I mean, this isn't that hard, but you have to create the time to do it.
It isn't that hard, but why it's really powerful that you're... advising that, that you're highlighting, that you're stressing, that you're pushing it, that you're creating ways to do that, is that no one else is doing that. No one else is doing that. And it takes someone with your experience and background who's been there, done it, to say, stuff isn't working, or like, you need a step change here. And this is one of the problems. So I think it's really powerful that you're encouraging or even like opening eyes to say, this is critical.
I hope so. I think I am. And I think the show helps do that too.
It totally does. Yeah. It's a beautiful place for people to get those insights. Wait, can I ask you another question?
We flip the mic. I love it.
Jim, I want to flip the mic. I could talk, but like, actually you're the one that like, whose creativity is blowing you away right now?
I mean, TikTok's doing a pretty good job, right?
Totally.
You know, everything's happening there. And I know they're in the crosshairs of a lot of stuff right now, but they do appreciate creativity and creators in that culture. And that's why you're seeing kind of boundless and limitless creativity. So, you know, you sort of have to start there. And it's hard to create a culture like that, and they've done it. So I think I'd go there. You know, this is sort of one that's right in front of us. I'm not sure we're stopping to learn as much from it. Women's sports.
In every way,
the stories, the drama, the matches, the people, the community, the spirit, and, you know, and it's not just basketball. It's soccer. It's the Olympics. It's so many things. You know, I live in San Diego part-time. The Wave is here. Fabulous team, fabulous organization, fun experience. So I just think there's a lot of lessons for brand builders for what's going on right now with women's sports.
Oh, isn't it so exciting and so incredible to see what's happening with women's sports? So overdue, but a really exciting moment. That's a great example.
Hey, listen, we're going to get to the creative brief in a minute, but I do want to ask you one question. You're part of you're sort of the P&G of dating apps, right? The Match Group, right? You've got like 40 brands. So you dominate the category. So could you talk a little bit about that? We have a lot of listeners who work in big companies that have multiple brands. How do you manage that at Match Group? How much do you bring to the center? How much do you decentralize? How much do you share learning across brands? You obviously move people across brands because you did that. So how do you run as a Match Group organization to maximize your potential and your growth of both your people and your brands?
It's a great question. I think what's really powerful about Match Group is that the learnings are so deep. The learnings are so deep. And it is so difficult to do anything in tech. You layer in GDPR regulations, you have data privacy, you have so many things. We're subscription businesses. On Tinder, at least 70% of our users are free. There's a lot of things happening. The advantage that Match Group has is many, many, many years of experience in dealing with all of those pieces and all of those things. I'm not at the portfolio level, but what's great is how Tinder is encouraged and allowed to have its, you know, a clear brand, a clear vision, a clear identity, and we're allowed and encouraged to move fast. And I have phenomenal sibling marketing leads at other brands, and you can, you know, say, oh, I love the work you did. What do you think about this? How are we feeling about this? And it's a really, really special place to be. And, you know, that you can't ever stop having new insights and learnings, can you? And so it's a pretty exciting company. And it's a phenomenal culture. It's a phenomenal culture. You know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting when I came to Match Group was how the brands, you know, really, really did have these different identities and had a lot of autonomy and agency to do the things that were special and meaningful to that brand. And so that's been really exciting to see prove out. You know, I'm excited for the future and excited for what comes next. And the good thing is, like, we need connection and we need it more than ever. So it's an important time.
Let's move to the creative brief. And we talked about misconceptions earlier about your brand. I'd like to know, what's the most common misconception about you as a leader?
Oh, gosh. Did I have all the answers? I don't know. Maybe people be like, we don't think she has all the answers. I just think any leader that says the bullshit that they know exactly what to do and when to do it, especially in marketing, it's It's BS. So I think the misconception is that as you become more seasoned, again, you and I were talking about this earlier, you're actually more humble and you're more curious. So I would say that about me, I'm more curious. I'm more, hopefully, more humble about approaching all the problems.
What about Gen Z inspires you the most?
Oh, gosh. What doesn't? They are the most authentic generation we have seen. They are showing up as who they are. How beautiful that I'm talking to a group of women in a cafe in Brooklyn, and the first thing they want to know about a dating app is if it's a place where their queer friends are welcome. How amazing is that? You wouldn't get that answer from millennials or Gen X or boomers. You wouldn't get that answer. And so I think if I had to only give you one answer, it would be the sense of community that they bring to everything. The sense of community. It is not just about them. It is not. And we see that in Tinder profiles and people adding a pro-choice sticker and adding a sustainability sticker, right? They're signaling not just, I have a cat or I went to college. That tells me nothing about compatibility, right? Oh, you're passionate about reproductive access? Okay, I would like to know more. Let's go out, right? Yeah. And so that is so cool and so interesting. And also, by the way, a very important ingredient of a happy long-term relationship is, do you care about the same shit?
Right, right.
So yeah, everything about Gen Z though inspires me.
What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you way back growing up as a little girl in Muncie, Indiana?
Probably this dance brand, Capizio, which is going to sound maybe a little bit unexpected, but my mom was a modern dancer. And so dance and artists were just a part of my life. And I remember the feel of that brand and how it felt so special to get, you know, ballet shoes or a leotard. And it was that creative outlet as a kid in a not diverse, conservative state, and what that signified, what dance and art signified in a place like Muncie, Indiana, was really powerful. And that brand will always have like a special place in my heart.
Did you dance as a child?
I did. I danced my whole childhood, not because my mom forced it, but because I loved it. And I loved the artist community. No matter where you are, when you find an artist community, it's very special. And again, going back to like LGBTQ representation, I had many uncles. The most incredible people in my life could not be who they authentically were. They could not be out. They could not be. And my mom was so beautiful in her passion for showing up for that community, for unapologetically being from that community. I'll never forget when I heard a gay slur and my mom pulls the car over. I was repeating what I heard on the playground without understanding it. I was like, kind of like, what's this mean? She pulls the car over immediately and says, you will stand up for anyone that is called that, reference that. You tell a grown-up right away, you tell me. And if you ever get in a fight over that, you won't get in trouble. You'll get a reward. Like, she basically was like, you show up for that community. She really impressed upon us at a young age the importance of showing up for communities where that was harder for them to do that. So
what a mom,
right?
Wow.
What a mom.
So what's the first dating app brand that made an impact on you?
It was OkCupid. I was living in New York City. I was single and I loved meeting people and going out. I was in PR. So I had to do that. And I was a publicist for celebs. And so you're just thrown into situations where you just gotta like, you had to do that. Mm-hmm. So OkCupid was the first one. And I loved it because I'm like, oh, well, it's New York City. Like I don't have, it's fun to meet people, but I get to kind of curate that a little bit. So, I, you know, interestingly, it was the first brand that had a bit of an impact. Also, they had a, you know, OkCupid has a questionnaire. And so it's actually, it forces a bit of self-reflection that at that point in my life was really great in terms of thinking about like, oh, what is actually a fit for me?
We talked about this a lot in the show. You're a CMO who's not afraid to take a stand on issues that are important to you and your brand behaves the same way. A lot of people are wrestling with that. What's your counsel to those who are trying to find their way?
One thing I would say is if Gen Z is important to your business at all, you are going to miss an opportunity and frankly put your business at risk if you're not paying attention to that. They over-index on researching does a brand have a stance? They have an opinion. How are they showing up on critical issues? So that's one thing I would say. Another thing I would say is, oh, stand for something. Stand for something. It's got to tie back to who you are, yeah. right? At Tinder, we're the biggest app in the world. And in many parts of the world, we might be the only outlet if you're LGBTQ where you can show up who you are and find community. And so we have been very loud on LGBTQ equity and we're doing a lot, you know, again, all over. It is something to be proud of. It makes business sense. And I'm just getting bored of brands that aren't taking stands. I really am. And if you think that that 24-year-old is not researching how you're showing up on that, you know, you're missing a big part of your business. Are you finding that brands are becoming more or less brave when it comes to taking a stance on social issues? Or do you think it kind of evens out?
I think they're more cautious, you know, but I think your advice is spot on. It has to make sense for your organization, your heritage, your history, your brand, your category, your consumers. But you're going to have to stand for something, and there will be days where that is hard, and you just have to stay true. And the ones that have slipped haven't stayed true, and the ones that have been consistent have been fine.
Yeah.
Who's been the most inspiring person in your life?
My mom. We talked about her earlier. Her passion and her action on standing up on issues that mattered in a part of the country where that was not easy or welcome is, I say brave, but also like important. Like she would say, that's not brave. That's what you do. That is what you do. It's not brave. It's expected. I think what this role at Tinder has allowed me to do is get back to like what matters and what's my opportunity. Our lives are so short. And Jim, you're a parent. So many of us are parents. We spend more time at work than we do with our families and our kids. And so, you know, I've reached a point where if I don't have real meaning and real impact in my work, what am I doing? What am I doing? You know, and I get a lot of that from my mom. And I witnessed that as a kid. I witnessed her reach out to the family that had just moved to the States, that was having a rough time. I saw her do this. I saw the conversations. I saw their outreach. I saw her invite them to our home. I saw this. And, you know, as you get older, you reflect more on the importance of that. And what opportunities are we not taking up in our jobs, in our marketing? If a giant proportion of our marketing is not elevating queer love, then it's not right. Then we're not doing it. My team in India started Queer Made Festival, which has become one of the biggest festivals in India. Tens of thousands of queer businesses and creators and outlets like descend in India for this really amazing weekend. Like, you know, these are the things that get me going. And by the way, they're good for business. They're good for business.
Yeah. Melissa, I hate to stop this. We could go to so many different places. Thank you for interviewing me. So this was truly sort of a coffee chat. And by the way, our listeners love the show because they think they're eavesdropping on a conversation between friends. And this one, I think, was every bit of that. You're such a inspiring person. And so thank you for everything you're doing. This has been a fabulous discussion. It's going to be a wonderful episode, one of my favorites. So thanks, Melissa.
Jim, I thank you so much. I honestly would love to just like flip the cards and talk to you and get your take on things. Maybe we'll do that over a coffee. But thank you so much for the space to talk through some of the things that we're doing and to share your insights. I think they're so cool. So thank you so much. I had a really wonderful, wonderful time. Let's do it again.
That was my conversation with Melissa Hobley. Three lessons from this one for your business, brand, and life. And the first one is to be really intentional with how you spend your time. Melissa is a fabulous leader. This was a fabulous conversation, but I loved how she spoke about creating time for reflection, creative thinking, strategy planning. She doesn't get overbooked. She doesn't get consumed by activity. She spends time understanding her consumers, Gen Z, and she spends time in the right way with her teams, and she spends time in the areas that are highest leverage for her. Second takeaway, this was a great case study on how to build a brand that Gen Z loves. Melissa's knowledge of Gen Z, her team's knowledge of Gen Z, the relentless curiosity to learn about this cohort. There were all kinds of lessons in here. The one that I loved is the importance of community with this group and the importance of standing for something, which leads me to the third takeaway. It's so important you and your team are inspired by your brand and what your brand aspires to stand for and the difference your brand is trying to make with its customers and the world at large. Melissa and her team are loving the impact they're making in the world. They just came out with a fabulous global campaign that's impacting the business. She could not stop talking about connections, the importance of relationships, and the role she and her team and the brand Tinder have in moving that forward. That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production. Episodes of the CMO Podcast are produced by Gallery Media Group. The views and opinions expressed by podcast speakers and guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of our sponsors or its personnel, nor do our sponsors advocate or endorse any individuals or entities featured on the episodes.